Thank you for listening to this podcast brought to you by the Center for Christian Music Studies at Baylor University. This podcast was recorded at the 2011 Alleluia Conference. In this session titled, Creative Approaches to Grow and Maintain a Full-Time Ministry in a Part-Time World, Danny Ingram discusses ideas on developing and training volunteers along with the other day-to-day tasks of the music ministry. To learn more about the Alleluia Conference, visit us online at www.baylor.edu/alleluia.
When it comes to volunteers, and I'm just going to tell you what I did. I was at a large church, and then I went to a very small church just to, I think I told you yesterday, to finish my master's. And I was just going to be there 1 year. That was the deal we made. I'd come 1 year. And then, but after that first year, the pastor was in a lot of turmoil, was fixing to leave. So then I didn't feel like I could leave the church without the pastor. And then the next year, my friend, who I'd done lots of revivals and events with, was coming to be the pastor. So I didn't feel like I could leave him. So I stayed another year, and then we remodeled the sanctuary, put a new stage, new sound, all that in. So I didn't really feel like I could leave after they did all that. And then one day I woke up and it's 15 years ago. So I don't know what happened. But now it's just a complete different place. And I always tell people, and I'm not making this up, I'm at the best church in Texas. I mean, it's just, there's no tension, there's no issues. They fund programs, they do what I want to do, which that's what makes it great. And, because there's no, you know how it is when you got to fight and push and pull to get anything done. So it's just a wonderful place. So what I'm gonna tell you is there are things that I do and don't do, and you have to apply this to your own situation. Just because it worked for me doesn't mean it'll work for anybody else. But these are kind of the guidelines I go by in order to continue to grow and maintain the ministry. First of all, when it comes to volunteers, and I broke this up in the media and choir and praise team, the first thing, what not to do, is never announce a position to the entire church. And that's because, and please understand, I'm just telling you the truth, okay? Just be honest and forget since nobody's here to tell us. You will get the people that you cannot use that will volunteer, and then that puts you in the position of having to unvolunteer them or find something else for them to do. You know what I'm talking about? It happens every time. So seek and find the position you need, figure out what skill set you need to accomplish that, and go out and get that person. Don't ever announce it to the whole church. That's just mine. The second one is never put a high school kid in charge of anything. And the main reason is they can probably do it better than anybody else, especially when it comes to media and computer and social networking and all that. They can do it better than anybody else. So it's good to have them involved in the program, but make sure they're not the ones that are the final link between you and the world, because they will disappoint. And it's just because they're, I have a high school kid, I know. So the third one, what not to do, is trust someone's opinion of themselves. Who was it that said trust and verify? Was that Reagan? Or if someone comes up to you and says, I'm a great bass player and I have my own bass and my own amp, red flag. They're probably not that great. So always, have you ever fallen into that? Someone gives you their resume and tells you how good they are, and then bam, you're nailed, and they stink, and you're stuck, and you don't know what to do. We had, I'll give you an example. This happened many years ago. I lost our bass player, so I had a guy come and say, I have a bass, I know how to play bass. And I said, okay, but I have a guy coming in a couple of weeks. I didn't really. I just said that to give me a way out, And he said, I can play, no problem. Can I bring my girlfriend? My girlfriend wants to come to church. Okay, no problem. So he comes and plays. Girlfriend sits on the second row. Worst singer I've ever heard in my life in the congregation. And she wouldn't sing with everybody else. She wanted to echo. And it was total distraction. You would think a guy playing a bass would eventually get the right note just by happenstance. At some point, the right note and his note would cross, you know? It never did. It was the worst 2 weeks of my life. And that girl was sitting on the front row belting it out and wanted to echo and didn't want to sing with the group. And the whole congregation is just, you know, you get that awkward feeling and, you know, my shoulders start to itch, you know, and I don't know what to do. So don't trust someone else's opinion of themselves. Number four, don't allow a volunteer to go several weeks uninvolved. That's, you know, if they go a week and they're not involved, and the second week and they're not involved, and the third week they're not involved, then they're gone. You start to lose them. So even if you need to get them to do something else, if you don't need them for their primary role, then get them involved some way or you'll lose them. And what I like to do, and this gets you out of problems that you might get into with somebody that's not doing a job very well, is I have a cross-train rule. Just because if your job's to run media shout in the service, you also need to know how to run a camera and how to edit Pro Tools, and so that if I need you in another position, we can move you to there. And what that does, two things. One, you have a backup plan, and two, it doesn't get people institutionalized within a position. You can never get them out. You know, I've had people before that this is their job, and they may not be doing it exactly the way I want it, but they've been doing it for so long that you can't get them out. So I move them all around so none of them take ownership of, this is my camera, this is my spot, this is, even if it's just to move from one camera to another or from one computer to another, whatever, just to keep them off balance. Never wait to provide training. Always provide training right away. Because it's really frustrating for somebody to get into a job. And see, what they don't understand, especially when you get a volunteer that's never done anything before, they don't understand the pressure that hits them right when the service starts. And then they realize, oh, wait, everybody's watching and I'm responsible for this screen. What if I push the wrong button? You know, they have that moment of panic. So don't wait to train. What I do is when someone comes to me and says, I want to be involved in the media team or whatever, then what I say is, okay, we're going to have a training day on this day. And then I gather up four or five of them at a time and then have one day of training. Train them on media shout, train them on camera, train them on lighting, whatever. And do it all in one day and save them up. What to do? Seek out individuals that you feel can handle the position needed. You know, people with computer skills are invaluable these days. As you, I don't have to tell you, everything is computer-based. Even editing, cameras, audio, lighting, everything is computer-based. Find people who can lead and recruit within their own area. I have one guy that's over the camera people. And so he's got his circle, his group of influence, his circle of friends, and he can recruit people to operate cameras from that area, from his area. Also, he can train them. He knows how to. It doesn't take a genius to run a camera. You know, you pretty well get, we have nice tripods, you pretty well get the in and out. It's all auto-focused, it's all synced, so all you really have to do is just point it in the right direction and do what's coming over your headset. And it, you know, it doesn't take a genius to do it. But what I have learned is there's some, was that the same girl that walked in yesterday? I think it is.
She's counting.
Oh, man, she must, every time she comes in, she goes, ooh, no. Don't take positions like camera, like I just said. It doesn't take much to train them to do a Sunday, just to, you know, point and shoot. But I had a student whose dad was a cameraman for the Cowboys, worked at Texas Stadium, did the camera there. He came in and did a little class for our cameraman. Man, there's so much stuff that camera people can know, just little things that can make a total difference that I never realized. You know, most people have grown up in a camcorder world, you know, just taking pictures of the kids, isn't that good? This guy added so much, so many little nuances that were just really valuable. Keep people involved, have frequent meetings, communicate the vision, develop a vision, What I like to do is get everybody together. Everybody. Instrumentalists, singers, cameramen, pro tools, front of house, lighting. Get everybody together in a room. And what I normally do is do a meal, you know, and have a meal catered, feed them. And then we just talk about stuff. I mean, make a little agenda, but not much. And we say, what can we do to coordinate this lighting with this camera? You know, what can we do to get this shot with this shot? What can we do to transition from hymn to chorus? What can we do, you know, just to make things better? And I used to think that I was the only one that knew how to do it. But if you you get 20, 25 people in a room and start just batting around ideas, you can get some pretty good stuff out of there. And, you know, people come from different places. They've been in other churches. They look at things differently than you do. And so it's been real valuable. And develop a vision. Make sure that your people know what you want to accomplish, where you want to go, how you want to do it. And we talk about that every time we get together. Saying, you know, this is, and my part of my vision is we need to be the very best that we can be. You know, I don't handle things. If I make a mistake, it's okay. But if they make a mistake, I want them to work on fixing it. I want it to be the very best it can be. And the same goes with equipment. Our people, the budget committee, the people have come to expect that when I want or need a piece of equipment, they know I'm not going to buy a cheap piece of equipment. I want the very best piece of equipment. I mean, that's what the secular world would do. So why do we not do it? Why do we settle for the third-hand projector passed down from, you know, some corporate place? Why shouldn't we have the best equipment? It's just like, you know, sometimes people bring, have you ever been in this position where they bring in an organ, you know, and it's worthless, and they think they've done you some big favor, and you put it in the attic, you know?
Our computers are
ancient.
Oh, gosh.
Well, we just bought 10 new Apple, top of the line, for everybody that works in the building. And, we used to lease from Dell. I'm the only one that still has a Dell. We quit leasing, and now we buy it all. Buy it all, and they all have Apple except for me. Try new things. I love to try new things, and the reason is it keeps people on their toes, and they don't get comfortable in their position. You know, when you work with a band, they can be over prepared to where they know something so well that they don't concentrate as much, and that's when you make a mistake. So I like to do something. I like to keep. Put something in there that's a little different or a little new, doing something a different way, and it keeps your people on their toes, keeps your people thinking. And because they get too comfortable, then they get relaxed. It's the same old shot, it's the same old lighting, it's the same old tune over and over again. Choir and praise team. What not to do? Never announce an opening in the praise team. And be prepared if you've had three singers up there every week, this just happened to me. I've had this girl singer for 4 years. Great singer. Well, she graduated this year. Everybody in the building knows she's graduated. So I got a line of females wanting to take her spot. And I didn't have to announce anything. They can figure this out on their own. And so I do I'm not sure what direction we're going to go with that right now. So that I don't get myself into a spot I don't want to be. Once they're up there for that first Sunday, then, man, they're there. It's hard to, so make sure you got the right person coming in. And what's important to me, more so than singing, if you have a great singer and you have a pretty good singer, but no one can deal with the great singer, I'll take the pretty good singer. Because the band chemistry and the chemistry of the group, to me, is far more important than one individual person. So unless they're really good, if Allison Krauss came and she was a problem, she could stay. But everybody else, don't have a choir president if you can get away from that. Any of you deal with that? You know, when I first went to San Saba, the guy walks up to me and says, I'm the choir president and this is what we're planning next week. And I said, whoa. There is no point in a choir president that I can see. Don't have expectations of a special every Sunday. We were talking before about not having a choir special every week. Are y'all in that position? Do you do one every week? You do?
We do one every week.
We take a hiatus during the summer.
Right.
And there's going to be certain Sundays, but we know in advance, like Christmas, we're not going to.
Right.
But you know.
Pretty much every Sunday.
But pretty much every Sunday.
Is it working for you? Yeah. See, what I had to get away from those expectations because when I first went there, we had a small choir and they were terrible. And trying to come up with a new piece every Sunday was killing us. But if we could work a couple weeks on one, 3 weeks on one or so, and they weren't used to rehearsal, they were used to getting together, opening up a hymn, singing a hymn, and that's the special. Well, I could do that. So we kind of got out of that expectation until we could build it up. But if you're there, it works, and I'm all for it. Avoid having a praise team star. This doesn't work for me at all. This is just me. It may work for you, but for me, if there's someone that wants to be the star or wants to be the, or thinks there's something special, they're out. I don't care how good they are. I can't deal with it. What to do? Recruit constantly. Rehearse always. Recruit some more and rehearse some more. Communicate the vision to the praise team. Have team building events. We go to different places and do different things. A lot of times what I'll do is bring in a worship guy to do a concert or whatever. But part of the deal is you spend, the concert Saturday night, you're going to spend Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon with the praise team going over some, talking about different stuff, different ways to lead, different ways to sing, stuff like that, so that we can kind of have that interaction with other people. It really builds community. We also always, we'll do Lord's Supper or communion, whatever you call it in your denomination, just with the praise team occasionally. Sometimes we'll just gather in a room and kind of have a little confession time, stuff like that. And I didn't put this down, but I also have real, real strict rules about public behavior for the praise team people. And if you violate any of this, then you're out. And I've worked a system now to where there's guidelines. Like if you have a public mishap, whatever it may be, here's what you need to do to get back, which is why you're smiling at
me. I'm smiling because I was Baptist and I wound up in an Episcopal church. And one of the things I did was visit this Baptist church. You know how it goes.
Uh-huh.
New area, they call it a community church. But anyway.
Right.
And the praise team, we're too loud, Paul. They had an announcement time. They said, hey, come hear us at such and such club down on Lower Greenville. And my first thought is, oh, there's a Christian coffee house. And then I went and looked it up online. No, it was a club.
Right.
And so their gig on Sunday morning was to play at this church.
Right. They're just hiring.
And then their gig on Friday night was to play in this bar.
Yeah.
You know, Friday night and Saturday night, and then on Sunday morning, that was their other gig.
Okay, we don't do that. Yeah.
Yes. They were strictly a professional band.
I'm overkill on this. And I know that, like, Lutherans and Episcopals don't care about this as much, but my band, you don't drink at all.
Oh, we drink.
We drink together.
Yeah, I know.
We do too. Yeah.
Ours do not. That's a rule. And, and anything that would bring about not dishonor, but would question your whatever you are doing in public against the praise team of the church, then that's just me. I'm overkill at them.
Do you require like a dress code for them or anything like that?
I do for the women.
I say dress code, like the statement like, business casual.
I'm going to show you a video of one of the band, and you'll see that we don't really. In the summer I wear this on Sunday. In the summer, in the winter months, fall months, most of the band wears a tie or a suit, but I don't in the summer.
That you don't make any statements.
My piano player wears flip flops and takes off his shoes, but I just put a plant in front of the piano and to hide them.
I have fluffy leopard shoes under my piano.
Well, that depends too. I mean, part of the appeal for our church was they started in elementary school, and the whole thing was you can come to church in your shorts,
right,
and t-shirt, and flip-flops.
Right. And people
know?
Do.
And so people still do, and
right.
It drives me nuts, but it's me.
Right.
And I have to just say, okay, here's this 50-year-old man in shorts, and I'm just, please no. But,
yeah.
You know.
Well, see, I did a revival at a church one time for that was a friend of mine in Albuquerque, and when I stand up, you know, to start the first song on the first day, there's a guy in the front row eating a banana, and it just threw me off. I wasn't ready for it, you know, and I thought, is that a banana? Is he eating a banana? And so it was, I don't mind, there's not a, on Sunday morning in our place, we'll have 300, you can count maybe three seats, maybe, and that's just, and that's it.
I will say, though, that is too, because we were at a ministry in South Texas on the Gulf area, and I will say it's different in different locations.
Right.
I've noticed, too, you know, I mean, more people dress in shorts and flip-flops down there than they
right.
do in Dallas area. Or
so I think everything, every like, sometimes praise teams or groups will come to our church to watch our group, and they'll say, well, I'm not sure that would work for us. And I'm going, well, of course it would. You know, I've tailored this exactly for these people. You can't take this and put it in another group of people and it work. You know, if I took our exact group over to the Presbyterian church, we'd have to park an ambulance outside and haul them out with, you know, because they would stop breathing. It's just different. You have to tailor for your people. And guidelines for volunteer soloists. Now, these are just my rules. My best rule is I don't have them. But if they're going to absolutely sing, they must sing in the choir of the praise team. I can't stand the pew people who think, tell me, how many times have you heard this? God told me to sing this song. And, you know, my answer is, could you please tell God to tell me? And because it's usually means I can't sing, which I'm not a singer myself. But if you're not doing the grunt work, if you're just sitting on the pew and every once in a while you want to pop up and sing a solo, I can't do that. No talking, just singing. What I tell people is we pay somebody to talk, and it's not you. if your song needs explanation, sing a different song. It has to be memorized. Absolutely, positively, no tracks. On Sunday morning, I cannot. On Sunday night or Wednesday night or someone's coming in from the outside, not on Sunday morning, I can deal with tracks. But our people on Sunday morning, no tracks. That's just me. Now I do use are you familiar with Ableton 8 live? So okay, what Ableton is it's a live it's like a live playback system. So we record the tracks in Pro Tools, put them in Ableton, and then all our band has a Avion in-ear monitor system, so I can play the track through their earpiece so that they can hear it, have a count. But the reason that's okay is because I'm playing all the instruments. You know, it's not, we're not buying in the store and it's some professional instrument. I lay all the tracks down myself. And then you can, in their ear, I can say, okay, chorus, second time, now. And only they hear it so that we stay together. And I'll usually count down from four. I'll usually go 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 2, 3, 1, and then the drummer kicks it off. And so I can give instruction that only they hear in their ear. So we do that, not often, but that's
so,
okay.
So this is live?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not like smart music or something?
No, it's saved in the computer. You know, I'll lay down strings or instruments that we don't have.
Okay.
Like usually string parts, maybe a Hammond organ part, something like that, that we can have to color the music. But, you know, I lay it down exactly like I want it. Now, you can buy Ableton software that comes with pre-made songs already in it, which is so much better than a DVD track because, for one, it's MIDI sounds that are not recorded. The computer's playing those MIDI sounds right live as you're singing it. It's not a MIDI sound that's recorded. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You don't lose. You're not losing one level of digitalness to where it has air or whatever. You have to rehearse with the band twice, and I have to pre-approve the song. So usually when I give somebody the rules, I don't see him again. Here are my unwritten rules. My uncle from Toledo will be here next Sunday. I mean, have you heard that? He's a professional singer. You're gonna love him. Sorry, I've already got the Sunday planned. If he could send me a tape or something, and then next time we could maybe hook him up. Joyful noise does not apply to soloists. And there doesn't have to be a special every week. The church I grew up in was him, announcements, special, him, choir special, message, every single Sunday. And people, as I got older, when I was in high school, I played the organ for my church. And I noticed, the music minister had been there for, I don't know, 100 years, and I noticed that people would hang out in the lobby at rehearsal, and they wouldn't come in, because the choir director would be sitting on the front row, and usually the first guy through the door, he'd say, I think you need to sing a solo this week, and that's what I, write them down. So none of them come in. They'd all hang out in the lobby, because they want to be the first one in the door and get tagged with having to sing. So don't get into where people are going to ask you why there wasn't a special that day. Let me show you a clip of my band. Now, I know you're tired of the disclaimers, but I got to tell you, I cannot sing. I'm not a singer. I'm a worship leader. Can you turn both off?
Yeah.
I'm a worship leader. I'm not a singer. And remember, the camera adds 10 pounds. Even though I'm standing here in front of you. That's our setup. Now, for this particular event, we hung this, we have stained glass behind here, but we hung this Muslim up just to give it a different look. I just had a small group choir. This is our regular sax guy. This was our regular piano guy. He joined the Air Force, plays every day now with the Air Force band.
Wow.
This guy was a guest that night. His name's Ron Wilkins, just a beast of a trombone player.
Yeah.
You know him?
Sure.
No, he's a beast.
From San Antonio?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's my drummer.
I've got one of his CDs. He's great.
Oh, he's unbelievable. Seven octave range.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
this is
God.
A friend of mine who just graduated this year from Juilliard with a trumpet degree in trumpet performance. That's my regular bass player. He works for a music repair business, has a music degree. That's my mandolin player. Can't read a note of player music. Looks like he came out of the hills. I have a percussion guy, a 12-string rhythm guitar. Oh, that's a 6-string rhythm and 12-string. The church owns both these instruments. That's a Taylor 12, and that's a Martin. This is my Rhodes, Fender Rhodes piano. Are you familiar with those? Back in the 70s, I finally found one, had it refurbished. This is my friend Rob Tucker, who's the dean at
yes.
Howard Payne. Do you know Rob?
Yeah.
And that's my friend Lance Beaumont, teaches guitar at Howard Payne. Steve teaches woodwinds at Howard Payne. What
enough? Yeah.
So that's kind of the look. Now, what's the disclaimer? I'm not a singer. This is Precious Lord. Just want to show you how we pass around the solos.
Take my hand, lead me on, and help me stand.
Those are Shure Beta mics. They're $1,000 mics, but they're top of the line. I forgot the words, and the lady didn't put them up there quick enough for me to read them.
Lead me on to the light. Take my hand.
He's a beast. I'll wait till you're ready to play the solo, and then it'll blow you away. Lance does a lot of super summers and traveling around. Guitar sound like a tenor sax.
Yeah, that's the guy. Because I've heard the jazz band.
That's my guy every Sunday, right? He
oh,
plays
wow.
every instrument. You can see him all back there.
Well, sure.
He did an English horn solo last Sunday that blew you away. Watch what he does here.
Y'all have a great jazz band.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're good. He leads it. He takes it down an octave. I don't know why, but it just sounds cool.
That's a tenor.
Such sensitivity to the notes. Now, complete extreme with trombone solo. See, we have instrument mics on the horn just for the recording purposes.
That kid next to him was saying, "You gotta be kidding me."
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
That drama, he was just like, "Oh, I'm getting out of here."
Oh, you're saying this cat.
That fan.
And he's playing a king choir
trumpet. Yeah, yeah, in Georgie, too. It's not a trombone.
No, no, it's not a trombone. Hey, your set drummer is not too loud.
This trumpet guy, the solo is so tasteful. That's a Hammond B3 set on top. And on the bottom is a Roland 700. Synth. Look at that neck on that bass.
I was going to say, yeah, look at that thing.
Can't beat that Rhodes sound. No, it's just,
it is, yeah. And I've met Rob Tucker a couple times.
Oh, he's my best friend. We hang around every day.
B3 to them. That's cool. I've never seen a top like that.
I'm glad you brought me an organ of the day. You know, normally they go straight to the attic.
Yeah.
It was a Hammond A105, which is a classic $6,000 organ.
And yeah.
I gave it back to her and said, you don't know what you have here. San Antonio, called me up and I said, yeah, that's okay. I'm going to turn the lights back on. I also, when I had, I teach trombone at Howard Payne.
Yeah.
So I had him do a master class with about six or seven trombone players.
Did he do the thing where he sings? And
oh, yeah.
I don't really know. My son was in the Army band and was a trombonist, blah, blah, blah. And that's how I kind of met him a couple times. Mm-hmm. I was at TME. I was a band director.
Right.
So he was there. So.
Oh, he's just a beast.
Oh, gosh, it's scary.
And he's working for, is it King that he's representing? Yeah, he has all his horns, and then he laid out like six of them. He has a little big one all the way to, at 2 years ago, he played with the trombone choir. They did a band director's trombone, all the college professors that teach trombone did a trombone choir.
Oh, I see.
And he played the bass trombone, absolutely.
Wow.
And hung with the North Texas guy that played the lead tenor part. Anyway, go ahead, critique that. That's what we do about every Sunday, that kind of laid-back kind of half jazz, half country kind of style. If we have time in a minute, I'll play you one more to let you see the sax guy, what he can do. And I try to bring in, one thing that a lot of churches do not do that I love to do is as you can see from this, I love to give our instrumentalists a time to do their thing, what they do. You don't hesitate to give a soloist a time to sing a solo, but we don't very often allow a trombone player to play a lead or a trumpet or a sax or whatever. So our people are used to it. They know that, we're going to pass around a... Some people would come up to me afterwards and say, "Man, I'm so glad I'm not up there, and so I don't get the nod." Because we'll just be playing along, and I'll give the nod, and then it's your turn to play the lead. But everybody in the band can play a lead. Everybody in the band is comfortable playing a lead in any key. And I'm so spoiled. See why I'm at the best church in the world? Because I can I could have turned around right then and say, you know what? I'm not feeling G. Let's do A flat. No problem. Then, you know, they can switch in the middle. We'll have a complete rehearsed rundown sheet, and I'll say, you know what? I kind of want to do this in G and or in A or whatever, and bam, we're off and running. As long as I have the words, it's. So that's kind of what we do on Sundays. I'll play you another hymn in a minute to kind of show you how we treat hymns. Staff relations on the platform, and then I put on here. I'm so sick of the argument over what we call it. So I put Belvedere, dais, floor, podium, pulpit, rostrum, scaffold, stage, terrace, whatever you want to call the stage. Is it an argument in your play? Do you get that? It's just smugness to me. When, like, I have a lady that I could throw a rock out my window and hit the Methodist church. Not that I've ever done it, but I could. And, you know, sometimes we get together and it's like, well, and I'll say, well, I got this guy who's going to be on the stage with us. Like, it's not a performance. It's not a stage. I can't stand that. I can't stand the language. It just drives me crazy. But on the whatever you call it, the pastor is your best friend. You know, this communicates a lot. And I don't know how it works in the Episcopal Church, but in our church,
nobody ever says anything other than pastor.
Right.
It's a big hairy deal.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's what I thought. We, we kind of play around with each. Everybody thinks we're best friends, and we've worked together for 20 years, but you know, we don't go fishing or, you know, we don't really hang out, but the congregation gets the sense that we're best buddies, and that communicates so much, just in unspoken, to where they feel like this place is comfortable. You know, if they feel tension, it's a problem, and people can read you and tell if there's issues. So I'm not saying fake it, but fake it. But when you're on the stage and the pastor, your best friend, out there, always support the other staff too. Support others' ministries. You can find something good to say about even a youth minister, probably. And it's you have to work a little harder at it, but you can probably find something. I have three kids. I'm also the administrator of my church, so all the staff reports to me. And I have three kids in the youth group. And so the youth minister thinks he's gone and went the other way. Like, I'm constantly going to say, hey, that's what my kids said, you know. I'm being a minister. Make hospital visits. I don't know. Are you required to? You are?
I do.
You can. You know, you want to have people support your ministry. And the best way to do it is to show up in the hospital room. And what I normally do is take a guitar. And if they say, you know, they might say, you know, if they're a critic that we do too many courses and not enough hymns or whatever the balance, I'll just take a guitar and sing whatever they want, you know. And if they want old hymns, just sing right there in the room with them. Sometimes I'm taking two or three guys from the band. We just sit in the room or go out in the lobby and play for whoever's there. Notice when your people are missing. I don't mean just your people. Like, notice when your people are missing, of course. My people know not to let me know they're not going to be there. I mean, on Sunday morning, I don't look around and say, there's a hole there and not know it. The instrumentalists, I kill them. But the singers, I've heard them real bad. So, yeah.
You require the instruments, of course, to let you know. And maybe the choir, if you have the choir.
I let everybody. The reason, this is why. I can do without one of the six or eight in the little group that we had this particular Sunday. But I don't want people to think that I care a whole lot more about the bass player than I do the third alto, you know, which I do. But I don't want them to know about it. So I make a big deal when they don't show up and don't tell me. If an instrumentalist doesn't show up and don't tell me, then, you know, that's a whole different ballgame. And they don't, usually I require them to get their own sub of my list of people that are approved subs. So when they call me and say, I'm not going to be there Sunday, but so-and-so will be. So to fill in. Well, we don't rehearse in the summer. So it's kind of, I can move it around to fit what instruments I have that week.
I send everybody an email. every week to everybody, and it's and then we have the board in the choir room where everybody in the choir too, mm-hmm. they all sign up if they're not going to be here. But if I send them all an email, invariably I'll get it back that I'm not going to be here this Sunday.
Right. We do the we have one of those, and the secretary administrates it, so I don't know the name of it, but we do a we have a software that has all the band listed and all the choir, you know, and it shows the stage arrangement and you know who's supposed to be in what spot, and then she sends that out. And then every Sunday with what we're doing, and then they in what key it's in, and then they send it back if they're not going to be there. What they don't know, which is very interesting to me, is they don't know that I get a copy of every email that anybody sends to each other within the system. So if she sends an email to the drummer, and the drummer sends an email to the bass player sends it to the guitar back to the secretary, I get all of it. Yeah. So, because I want to keep. My number one rule is loyalty. If you're not loyal, you're fired. And loyal to me and to the ministry and to the church and to the pastor. If you're not, if you talk bad about any of them, you're out. And that's my number one rule. Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How many people on the platform do you pay? Like,
Here's my pay rule. If you are a full-time musician, that's what you do for a living, I pay you. And the reason is because we pay the plumber, that's a church member. We pay the electrician, that's a church member. So if you're a full-time musician, I pay you. That's number two is, if you come from out of town, if you live outside of San Saba, but you play in the band, then I reimburse you your gas. That's rule number two. And rule number three is, if I need you and the bass player, then I pay them. So if they're full-time musicians and that's their job, I pay them, even if they're members or not. A lot of them give back, but that's one way to get money out of the general fund into the music fund, because we pay them out of the personnel file, they say, and they just give it back to the music ministry. So it's kind
of
neat.
So like out of that, what we just saw, like Rob Tucker?
Rob, he just shows up when, you know, he's at First Baptist Brady.
Okay.
Doing music. If he came over, I'd pay. The sax player, I'd pay because he's full-time.
Because he's, yeah.
The drummer, I'd pay because he's from, now, I have another drummer. I have three drummers, and they're all great.
Okay.
One of them gets paid because he's from out of town. The other two don't. The bass player is a full-time musician. He plays in Temple Jazz Orchestra, teaches trombone. He's working on his master's in trombone. He's
okay.
A trombone player by trade, so I pay him. And my current band, right now, the bass, the sax, and the piano are the only paid people that are currently. Yeah.
Can I ask how much you pay?
I generally pay $100 a week. The bass player's been with me 6-7 years, so I pay him a little more. The sax player's been with me 8 years, so I pay him a little more. They get percentage raises just like anybody else. So, you know, if it's a 5% raise for the staff, and they make 105. So they're up to like 118 or 122 or something like that. But I don't keep track of it. The office does. I have about $10,000 a year in instrumental budget. So budget. Let me show you another. You want to watch one more?
Sure.
And I have another one from that same event.
Especially Bronze.
He plays and sings on this one. Now remember, I'm not a singer.
Oh Lord, my God, when I am someone,
the stage is totally movable, and I rearrange it often. I have three guys that are paid to deal with the stage. And I'll just tell them to clean it off, and then I'll draw them a picture of where to put everything back. My piano's not loud enough, but he's a player. Another thing I encourage people to do is, even if you're a rock and roller, if we're singing How Great You Are, you act like it's your favorite song in the world. So you can see most of them are singing with me when they're not playing. I told you, even if you don't know the song, you know, move your lips. And I make them act like this is my favorite song we're doing right now. So that communicates to the congregation. You can see everybody that wants one has their own, not the singers, every one of them has their own avionics system for the ear. You might be able to see it at the bottom here. I make the rhythm instruments use the avionics whether they want to or not. I always kid the sax player, he gets paid by the note. Listen how many notes he puts in this solo.
It's a nice horn.
He only uses it for spiritual songs. He does not use that for any secular gig. That's his.
Thank you.
So that's it. That's an offertory we did. It's a jazz piece that it's called something Corral Blues. Something Corral Blues. A trumpet sounds like an elephant. The clarinet sounds like the different instruments make. But I called it like Noah's Ark Blues or something like that. And so we did it as an instrumental. But just wrapping up here on budgets, never go over the budget. But never leave large amounts of unspent budget money. And never turn down a gift, even if it's that old organ you have to stick in your attic. Never turn it down, because the next time they come around, it might be. Just before I left, the people brought me that organ. I said, I can't. It was in immaculate condition. His mother died, and she was a music teacher in wherever she lived. She bought that organ used from the music company she worked for, and it was flawless. And had a Leslie speaker.
Wow.
And it's a $7,000 organ.
Yeah.
And they thought, it was a $200 or $300 organ. And do you think we get $200 or $300 for it? Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
And right now, where's my checkbook?
Yeah.
And it's so never turn down a gift, but never know what the next one will be. Great, any questions? Like I said, you do what's best for you. Don't try to do what's best for you. All right, thanks for coming.
Thank you again for listening to this podcast. To learn more about the Alleluia Conference, visit us online at www.baylor.edu/alleluia.